morning, everyone. Also want to welcome Curtis and Kayla and Kezia Hope this morning. It's always special when there's a new baby here for the first time. So God bless all you new parents as you adjust to parenthood. So this morning I'm going to have a little bit different of a message. It's actually going to be geared more towards the children. I'm going to tell a story, and I'm going to have some Bible verses that I'm going to get you to read. I have three verses, and I'm going to be looking to the boys to read the one verse and the girls to read the other verse. So, first of all, girls, maybe youth class on down, look up Proverbs 14:12. And then keep your Bible open to that. I might ask you to read that a couple times this morning. And then boys, if you want to look up Psalm 34, verse 7. While you're turning there, the story I have this morning happened in May of 1943, and to put a little perspective about how long ago that was, I think, Willard, you were born in September of 44, right? So that was about, this story happened about a year and a half before Willard was born. And this was in 1943. Does anybody know what was happening in 1943? World War II. So World War II was going full swing at this point. And in World War I, there was a lot of conscientious objectors that there wasn't really a place to go with them, and it didn't work real well. And so for World War II, the conscientious objectors and some of the Mennonite and non-resistant churches, there was a government program made for them. And they stayed in camps. They were called civilian public service camps. And these were young boys, young men, 18, 20, 22-year-old young men. Most of them were Mennonite, Amish brethren, young men, and they had jobs to do, like they would clear trails, like logging trails or fire trails in the woods. And where this story took place was in Virginia. And how many of you were at Faith Mission Homes? Okay, pretty many of you. Now this happened close to Grottoes, Virginia. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right, which is just outside Harrisonburg, Virginia, but it's kind of that type of area. And if you've been to Faith Mission, you remember how the hills are a little bit like the hills are around here. Some of them are pretty big mountains, and it's a little more like we have around here. Before we go on with that story, Ephesians 6:1. Can anybody tell me what that verse says? Any of the children? Anyone? Okay. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. So that's one of our verses that we're going to be thinking about this morning. Now, girls, if you want to read your verse, Proverbs 14:12, you can read it together. Okay, there is a way which seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. Okay, boys, you read your verse, Psalm 34, verse 7. Okay, so this story started May 17, 1943. There was a little girl called Doris Dean and her brother Odell were playing out in the yard outside their house. They had a sand pile and they were playing with a wheelbarrow and playing in the sand pile. Probably some of you children know what that's like. How many have sand boxes at your house? Some of yous. So it was about time for the other school children to come home. There was, I think, four of Doris's brothers and sisters that were in school. And they were just about, it was about time for them to come home. And soon they came home from school. And her one brother saw that the cows were out. I think it was eight. They were out of the pasture. There was one or two cows that were out. And so he went and told his mom and said, "Hey, the cows are out. I'm going to go get them." And he called for his little brother to go with him. And Doris Dean called her mom. She's like, "Hey, can I go along with the boys?" And her mom said, "No, you stay here." And guess what Doris Dean did? She waited till her mom wasn't looking, and she slipped up and followed the boys up into the woods. What was that first verse again? "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right." And when your parents tell you something or tell you not to do something or tell you to do something, there's probably a reason for why they tell you that. And I think probably Doris's mom was afraid that maybe Doris would get hurt or maybe she'd get lost. Well, okay, the boys were a little older than her, and they had ran up ahead and had gone to the back end of the pasture, and there was woods back there, and they found a place where the cows had slipped out of the fence, and they were up in there. There was a trail that went partway up into the woods. They saw the cow tracks going up in there, and they were kind of looking around, trying to figure out where their cows had gone. And by that time, little Doris caught up to them. And she was four. I don't know if I said that, but little Doris was four. So she was just old enough to get around and like activity and adventure, but she wanted to be with her older brothers. And so the boys saw that she came up and followed them, and they're like, "Hey, you better go back to mom," because they heard the cows back in the woods, and they didn't want her trying to run through the woods and help them catch the cows. So Doris headed back, and the trail that was going up the mountain, go down the mountain to the house, she got out back out to the trail, and she took a wrong turn. Instead of going down the mountain towards the house, she went up the mountain away from the house. And girls, what's your verse? Go ahead. So Doris didn't know that when she got back out to the path, she didn't know that she was turning the wrong direction. She didn't know that if she went up the mountain, she was getting further and further away from him. Well, the boys got the cows, got them in the pasture, and went into the house to mom, and pretty soon, mom was washing clothes, and she's like, "Where's Doris?" And I'm like, "Well, we sent her back down to you. We figured she came into you. That she must be playing out at the barn." So the boys and mom went out to the barn. There's no Doris. No Doris out at the barn. No Doris out at the sand pile. No Doris anywhere. And so they went up into the woods, looked and called, and they couldn't find Doris anywhere. And so this was about 4:30 in the afternoon. The dad and the other children were soon home from work, and they all went up in the woods behind the pasture and were looking, calling for Doris, but no Doris anywhere. And so they were starting to get very concerned, and it was starting to get later in the evening, and they called the neighbors and got some other ones joining in the search, but they couldn't find Doris anywhere. And so about midnight, a call came into this civilian public service camp where all these young Mennonite boys were stationed. And they said, "We have a little girl just about half an hour north of the camp and she can't be found. So there was 8 or 10 young Mennonite boys piled on a truck and went up. And I got this story from a combination of accounts. One of them was Paul Ebersole, and the other one was Harry Schwarzentruber, and there was another one, I think it was Paul Kaufman. And their accounts all were a little bit different, but they were similar. So anyhow, these boys all kind of, and the family, neighbors, they all kind of fanned out. They had flashlights and searched all night long for Doris, but Doris couldn't be found. So the next day, Tuesday, there was, the search continued, and it was still kind of loosely organized. There was just people heard about it, and different people came and helped search. Well, then later on the day, Tuesday, the state police got involved, and they set up a command post nearby on the one road that they could kind of organize the search and help make sure that they covered all the area, all the woods, so that they were sure that, hopefully, they were sure they could find her. So Wednesday morning, the search continued again. Tuesday, no Doris. They searched all day, no Doris. Wednesday morning, sorry. Remember, it was Monday afternoon. Now this is Wednesday morning. There was more men came from the conscientious objectors. There was local businesses. There was the state police. There was high school boys from the local high schools. And the state police got it all organized, and they had a couple of the conscientious objector boys help to organize the search, and they put them in charge of people. And so they were going up and down the mountain just combing the area, and they told the searchers that we want you to be 15 feet apart. I don't know, that's probably about the width of this stage. And we want you to go up the mountain, always keep the person to your left. You always want to make sure you see the person to your left. And if you can't see them, you just follow the person to your left. It reminds me of when we go bear hunting sometimes. We make a line up the side of the mountain, and we always got to keep the person to the one side in view in order to keep the line together. Otherwise, it gets all messed up, and then you don't know. You might be going around in circles. And there was, I'm not exactly sure, it was sometime Wednesday, maybe into Thursday, there was several hundred people. So if you, maybe like 300 to 400, they thought. And if you think about 300 people every 15 feet, anybody know how long of a line that would make? It's almost a mile. And so you think of this whole string of people going up and down. And the police told the men to look in the creeks. There was creeks there, and there was some washouts with like deep water there. They said, make sure you look in all the deep holes. Doris could have got in the creek. She could have drowned in the holes. Look in hollow logs. If there's a briar patch between you and the next searcher and you can't see, make sure you go in through there, because Doris could have went in through there. And just make sure you don't let any area of ground uncovered. So Wednesday afternoon, the police brought some dogs in. They brought two dogs. And they went to the house, and they asked Doris's mom if she has any clothes that Doris might have been wearing before she got lost. And her mom said, yeah, she was wearing her shoes in the morning. And she came in, I can't remember if she took a bath or took a nap or something, and she didn't put her shoes back on. She went outside. She was barefoot in the afternoon. So the police said, we'd like those shoes. And so they went up to the top of the pasture where the boys had last seen Doris, and they had the shoes, and they gave the shoes to the dog. And what do you think a dog would want a shoe for? they wanted the dog to have that shoe so that he could smell what Dara smelled like. So that dog got a good sniff of that shoe, and after he knew what Doris's feet smelled like, he took off through the woods, and he followed it for a little ways, and they went and crossed a creek, and the dog followed it right up to the creek, and they took him to the other side, and he just went around and around and around and couldn't find the track again. And so they took him back down, and sure enough, he got on the trail again and took it right the way he had before, right up to the creek, and lost it. Okay, so that dog just isn't doing it. So they went and got the other dog. They gave that dog Doris's shoe and left him smell it. And the dog did the exact same thing as the other dog, followed it right up through, got to the creek, and it vanished. So that wasn't working. So this was Wednesday evening. Still no Doris. How many days is this now? Wednesday evening. How many days and nights? 2 days, 2 nights. Can you imagine being out in the woods for 2 days and 2 nights? All by yourself? That would be a little scary for an adult, let alone a little girl. So Thursday again, they resumed the search. And one of the things that they talked about was the rattlesnakes and copperheads. And they had to be so careful. The one day, Paul Ebersole was walking along behind two other people, and he happened to hear something in the leaves, and he looked down, and here there was a rattlesnake. He was just ready to step on it. And they said, they killed the snake, and they said there was all kinds of steep rock cliffs that they had to navigate around. Places where the sun would lay in and the snakes would like to hide. All told, they killed 25 rattlesnakes and copperheads. Boys, what's your verse? And there was some pretty close calls when the searchers almost got bit by a snake, but nobody got hurt. So this is Thursday. Again, there's hundreds of searchers going through the woods, lining up, doing the drill, going up through. And they got a local pilot with a little Piper Cub airplane, and he hopped in that thing, and I think the passenger sits in the front of those, right? But anyhow, one of the state police hopped in with him with binoculars, and they flew around and were looking, just covering the ground. I think Thursday they covered 8,000 acres, and they saw lots of searchers all over the mountain. They flew that airplane right over the top of the trees so they could see down in there, tried to find Doris, but still no Doris. Both Wednesday and Thursday they had really bad thunderstorms up on the mountain. And I don't know if you've ever been out and about when there's a thunderstorm going by, but it usually doesn't last long. But for a little bit while that thunderstorm rolls over, it's like you have a lightning and thunder happening almost right on top of each other. But the searchers kept on searching because they figured Doris is out here, so we might as well stay out here. And they said they got 2 baths every day. In the morning, it was heavy dew. They got all soaked. And until they kept searching, they kind of dried off. And then there was a thunderstorm in the afternoon. Got soaked all over again. Again, Thursday. This was 3 days, 3 nights, no Doris. Friday morning, the state police got all the men together. And they said, "So we have to tell you now. We're concerned that maybe something got Doris. Maybe an animal got Doris. Maybe she's not alive anymore. Even if nothing got her, pretty soon, this is going to be too long. Doris hasn't had anything to eat or drink. She might not be alive anymore. So just, you can still call her name, but you might find a little girl that isn't alive anymore." And so the search party started out again, pretty soberly. And the police also told them that if you meet anybody up in the mountains, don't give them any information, but find out as much information as you can. And if you get any information or anybody saw anything, make sure you repeat back to the headquarters as soon as you can. Well, Friday, still no Doris. This is Saturday now, and I think they said there was like 1,200 searchers. And I can't imagine 1,000 people searching. Right here, we have 106. So you talk about 10 or 12 times this. And you can't imagine organizing a search with that. But I think it was one of the days they covered, the one day they covered 8 square miles, and they covered huge areas. But Saturday started out the same as most of the other days. And Harry Schwarzentruber was the one conscientious objector. And I couldn't find out for sure, but I think he was Amish. And he had been along, and he had been, the state police had learned to trust him, and he was organizing some of the crews. And he took Paul Kaufman and Luther Lurch up a one trail that some of these Mennonite and Amish boys had worked at clearing earlier in the spring. And they followed the trail, one on the left, the other on the right, and the one on the stayed on the trail. About noon they stopped and had lunch, and they had their little canteens that they carried with water. And at lunchtime, Paul went off behind the one tree, and he prayed and asked God that, if not against his will, he would just help him find Doris. And again, this was going on 5 days that Doris was missing. And they said it was a couple hours later, they were walking, and all of a sudden, they heard Paul say, "Here she is, boys." And they found he was walking along, and Doris was laying in a little indentation of rocks and leaves. And she had overalls. She had taken her overalls off, probably because she was all wet, and she was curled up in a little ball in that little bowl. And so he quick called the other two, and they came around there, and she struggled to sit up. They helped her sit up, and all she wanted was water. She could hardly talk anymore. She was all scratched up, and she was in pretty poor condition. But one thing the police had told them earlier Friday or Saturday morning, they said, if you find Doris and she is alive, she's going to want to drink water. She's probably going to be very thirsty. And they said, don't give her much at all, because too much water is going to be worse than none at all. And they said it could actually kill her if she drinks a whole lot of water at once. So these men gave her a little sip out of their canteen, and they were asking her questions, and all she said was water, water. She wants water. So they gave her another sip. And she kept begging for water. They gave her another sip, and finally they just poured their water out on the rocks, because they couldn't not give her water. So they talked a little bit, and were trying to figure out what they want to do. They were almost to the very top of the mountain, but they had found Doris Dean, and she was alive. So Paul stayed with Doris, and the other two went running down the mountain. They said they were just slipping and sliding, and if you imagine some of the steep mountains around here, and sometimes it's easier to go up the mountain than down the mountain, because it's slippery rocks and sliding down through. And they got to the police checkpoint and said, "We found her, we found Doris." And they had agreed that when she's found, there's going to be gunshots fired, and the police started shooting into the air to alert everybody that Doris was found. They sent the radio call over the radio to the nearest hospital, I think it was Harrisonburg, and told them to send an ambulance out and get ready for her at the hospital. So they took 8 or 10 men up in the mountain. They found where Paul and Doris were, and they built a makeshift stretcher out of tree branches, and I think some of them had their coats that they put their coats, wrapped their coats around it, and made a little little stretcher for her to lay in. And Paul Ebersole was along with that group that went back up and brought her down. And they said they needed 6 or 8 men to carry that stretcher out of the woods because it was so treacherous and steep. And so they carried her down, and there was half a dozen of the guys ahead of them that were clearing branches and making it so they could just walk down through. They took Doris down to meet her mom and dad and her brothers and sisters, and took her off to the hospital. I think she was in the hospital for 11 days, and she had pneumonia and scratches and things from the briars that had gotten infected, and finally 11 days later she came home. And these verses that we talked about, the angel of the Lord encampeth round about them that fear him and delivereth them. And when you have hundreds of men up in the woods like that, there's a lot of potential for something to happen, somebody to get hurt. You have Doris Dean out in the mountainside, and you have no idea how she got to where she got, but there was all kinds of snakes, there were wild animals, thunderstorms, but God kept her safe. And her mom, throughout the week, can just imagine what that might have been like for her mom to be waiting for words, waiting to hear what happened and where Doris was. And her mom said to some of the people there, she has faith that God is going to bring Doris back again alive. And they were very thankful for God's protection. But it was a story that that lives on and is told many times over. And Doris eventually got married, had some children, and she actually just died in 2023. So I thought that was interesting. But a couple thoughts that I'd like to think about with these verses. When Doris went up there, went up to her brothers, and they told her to go down to the house. Our verse says, there is a way which seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. And Doris thought she was going back to her mom. She thought she was going back to the barn. She thought she was going back to the house. But she turned the wrong way, and it almost cost her her life. And I had to think about this. The lesson I would like to learn for us this morning, especially children and youth, but all of us, is this idea that there's a way that seemeth right, but the end thereof are the ways of death. And this verse is warning us against relying on our own reasons and responses, our own reasons and emotions in making decisions. So often, Tyler talked about this in devotions, the devil wants to make the wrong path look attractive. And he wants to make the path that leads to death look attractive. And children, you don't have to be very old before your parents tell you one thing, but you want to do the opposite. And that was Doris. Her mom told her not to go along with her brothers, but she wanted in on the excitement. She thought that would be fun. And so she did it. And it almost led to her death. This verse implies that the consequences of our decisions might not be visible at the beginning, but the trajectory of those choices and the end is disastrous. And I want to guarantee you, sin will always cost more than you want to pay. You know, when we go to make a decision on purchasing something, we look at the price tag and we decide, oh yeah, that's a reasonable price, I'll buy it. Or we say, no, I'm not paying that kind of money for this. Well, see, the devil, when he puts a price tag, when we look at maybe, I'm talking to the youth, when we look at things that look attractive and things that we know probably aren't right, and we say, but I want that. And we look at the price tag, and we say, oh, yeah, that looks fine. It doesn't look like a big deal. Satan always is dishonest when it comes to putting a price tag on choices for sin. Sin will always cost us more than we want to pay. I had to think about this verse. There is a way which seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. Remember Lot. When Abraham and him were quarreling about the pasture for their animals, and Abraham said, I'll give you a choice. You decide which one you want. And Lot said, I'll take this over here, the well-watered plains. And he set up his tent on the far side of the pasture, between the pasture and Sodom. This is where I want to be. I'm far enough away from the bad stuff of Sodom. I'm close to the pastures. When the angel went to get Lot, when God was going to destroy Sodom, where was Lot? Anyone? In Sodom. Somehow along the way, that tent had gotten from just outside the pasture to inside the city. And it cost Lot his possessions. It cost Lot his family. It cost Lot almost everything he had. And if Lot could have looked at that price tag and decided, do I want those plains? Do I want to be close to Sodom? Close to all the conveniences? Or do I want to be over here? If he would have seen the price tag, he probably would have made a different choice. Let's be sure that when we see a way that seems right, that we seek God's direction, rely on God's directions, keep a close relationship with God so that when we make decisions, we can make choices that do not end in death. In the Christian life, we become lost by simply continuing to walk in the wrong direction, one step at a time. Neglecting Bible reading and prayer, making small compromises, following the crowd. The steps might seem small, but each step takes us further away from God and closer to death. Proverbs 4:19 says, "But the way of the wicked is as deep darkness." And if you think about Doris, when she was out in the mountain, and she was trying to find her way, and probably at nighttime, I'm guessing down there in Virginia in those mountains, it's probably as black as it is around here in the mountains. When you're out away from the house lights in the woods, you can see nothing. And the Bible says that's the way it is with the wicked. Doris may not have fully understood the danger, or that every step was taking her further from home. And sin produces the same kind of blindness in our lives. And my challenge to us, to children and youth and dads and moms, is that we would use discernment when there's a way that seems right. Let's try it and make sure that, let's seek God's direction and make sure we're making choices that end in life and not death. Let's kneel for prayer.